Okay, go ahead and get started. Announcement, just in case anybody's forgotten, the midterm will be due Friday, the start of class. Midterm going okay? Okay. Any clarifying questions anybody wants to ask? You can confuse them all what you have to do.
So when it says use the minimum number of transistors, that means that it's a certain transistor.
It's addressing this point. You remember when we went through switch utilization. If you make everything a four-quadrant switch, it'll work. Don't do that. I want you to use the thing that is exactly what is required.
So only exactly what is required, even if it might not be how we might implement it in the real world.
What you'll end up with would be a valid way to implement it in the real world.
Okay.
There are maybe some nuanced arguments there, but I'd say the implementation you should end up with is the most likely thing you would do in the real world.
Okay.
I think maybe what you're gonna have, MOSFET versus BJT, I don't really care there.
Okay.
That's fine. Okay. Body diode, I don't mind, but don't put two series, two parallel MOSFET diode, four quadrant switch and say, I'm more clever than you, this will work, I don't even have to do the problem. You'll get marked off for that. Okay. Any other questions?
So for those column three, when you add the couple of RMS MOSFET current, you want to use the maximum ripple?
By the time you get there, the waveform should be defined. And I want you to, yeah, include the ripple in your RMS calculation. Other questions? Okay. If not, we will move on. I do have office hours today if anything else pops up. So we've been doing this AC equivalent circuit modeling. We did a couple examples last time. The process for this was we take our circuit and we're going to apply two steps in order to generate this AC model that's going to be suitable for solving transfer functions of the power stage. So the first step is we average all of the waveforms over one switching period. This, in some sense, is no different than the small ripple approximation, but at least in our minds, we're keeping track of the limitations of this averaging over one switching period or what this actually means. In our steady state analysis, averaging over one switching period when we're in steady state meant everything was gone except for the DC. And we solve for the DC steady state. Now that we're concerned with AC and transient operation, averaging over one switching period leaves us with an average value, which is still time varying, but we've averaged away the ripple component of it, but still period to period, it's changing in a transient condition. So we take this averaging step and we get our averaged equations, which are still nonlinear. And then in order to be able to work with this and solve transfer functions, we linearize to get to our average small signal linearized equation, and then sketch an equivalent circuit out of those. That'll get us back into the circuit domain where we can solve analysis using our circuit analysis techniques. Okay. So we did the boost as we were deriving this, went through average linearized, and then sketched our small signal model. After that, we did an example of a buck boost, same averaged equation, linearizing those, and then using those three equations, develop three portions of our AC equivalent circuit. Okay. Today, we're going to do one more example. I'm going to do a flyback, and I'm going to include on resistance of the MOSFET. The process is going to be no different. And then for the remainder of the class, I'm going to talk about some other averaging approaches, things that we are not going to focus on in this course, but I'll give just a high-level view of some exposure to them. Okay, so flyback and difference here, we're going to do a converter that has a transformer, not going to be much of interest there, and then we're going to include losses that's going to look similar to as before, but as an example, so we go through and model this flyback. Flyback, recall, is buck boost derived, so we expect things to look similar to what we saw in the buck boost example. I'm going to take my first step, which is averaging all of my voltages on inductors, currents, and capacitors, and the input current if necessary. Is the input current necessary? What do we think? Input current, yes or no? How many no's? How many yeses? The yeses have it. Okay. It's perhaps sketched a little bit differently than the buck boost now. The switch is down here. So this switch is still directly in series with, sketch it upside down over here, the input source. That means when that switch is off, the input current is going to go to zero. Even before I start analyzing it, if this thing is doing anything interesting, I have to have some period where there's non-zero input current. Otherwise, it's not a power converter. And when this is off, it's going to have to be zero. So I'm going to have a pulsating input current. So I'm going to need to average the input current to get it, the input port back in my model. So I am going to have to average IG. Okay. Now that we are concerned with transient operation, our average voltage on the inductor is not zero, it is just L times DIDT in the average domain here. And then we're going to solve out what this is from the circuit, looking at both subintervals. So the first subinterval, when D is on, I'm going to have D of T times the voltage across this magnetizing inductance. I'm going to pick, as I've drawn there, my reference polarity for the L. So MOSFET's on, diode's off, so the transformer's doing nothing, it's open on the secondary. I turn the MOSFET on, I'm going to have VG applied across the series combination of the inductor and switch. And now that I have an on resistance R on of the switch, I'm going to have some drop across it. So my voltage on the inductor is going to look like, VG minus the voltage on my switch. When it's on, it's got an on resistance R on because no current's going to the secondary. The current through it is the magnetizing current I. So it looks like VG minus I times R on. And I've gone ahead and averaged all of my time varying waveforms. That all makes sense? Okay. Then add in whatever happens during the D prime interval. During D prime, switch shuts off. Magnetizing current goes through the primary of the transformer, comes out the secondary, and forward biases the diode and flows through to the output. So the voltage that's applied to this inductance, I'm going to have the output voltage applied across this secondary coil. It's going to reflect through an invert because it's an inverting transformer to be applied across that inductance. What I'm going to get is minus V over N. minus because of the inverting transformer and the 1 over n from going back through the turns ratio. Okay, average current in the capacitor is C dV dt. It's equal to, I'm going to have this minus average V over R term always. Capacitor's directly connected in parallel with this resistor, so I'm always going to have that current flowing out. Current coming in, it's just going to be during the D prime interval. I have the inductor current coming through. It's going to get reflected and scaled by a turns ratio. I for N as it comes left to right through the transformer. And average input current, same reasons we just argued. This is going to be 0 during D prime, so I'm only going to have my D of T interval where the input current is non-zero. And during that time, it's just going to be the average magnetizing current, I. Okay, so far. And this time, and just have these same equations already written here so I don't have to copy them over. So the next step, we're going to take these three average equations, my inductor, capacitor, and input current. We're going to linearize them to get our AC set of equations. Any preference that people want to see more perturb and linearize? Everybody okay with just doing Taylor series expansion of everything? Okay, no preference. So we'll do Taylor series just because it allows me to write a few less steps. We take this first equation, and I linearize the first order in my Taylor series expansion, neglect the DC terms. I'm only caring about these derivative terms. My variables are going to be D, VG, I, and V. So I'm going to have to take a partial of this expression with respect to all four of those, multiply by the small signal variable. And just start with D. I'm going to have D hat times the partial of this whole expression with respect to D of T. D of T shows up in a lot of these terms, so I'll go through one by one. So this first term, partial with respect to D of T, is going to be VG. Evaluate that at DC. Second term, it's minus I times R on. Here. Third term is going to be V over N. And there's a negative sign, but I'm taking the partial with respect to D prime, which is 1 minus D of T. Those negatives are going to cancel out, and I'll get plus V over N. Okay. I'll go through my other variables, VG hat, a little easier, just this term here, it'll be multiplied by D. I hat, multiplied by just D, but we'll get a minus sign, so minus I hat times D, times, R on, almost lost this term on the end. The last term here with respect to V, get minus V hat D prime over N. Okay. Everybody on board with that? All right. So then our next equation, C dv hat dt. So we take just the AC terms here. I'm going to have now V, I, and D that I need to evaluate partials with respect to. So through D hat, we'll take the derivative of this term with respect to D. I'm going to get I over N. Because it's D prime, I'm going to get a negative again. I'll get minus I over N. I hat d prime over n v hat over r. All right, and then last expression, I g hat. Do this one nice and simple. D hat I plus I hat D. Partial of this thing with respect to D times D hat. Partial of this thing with respect to I times I hat. And evaluating those partials at DC. Okay. These are now my three equations that I'm going to use for my equivalent circuit model. Top one is going to describe a KVL in a loop with the inductor. One's going to describe a KCL at a node with the capacitor. And this is going to describe just my input current, what it is. Again, I've taken these onto the next slide and just copied these same equations. I don't have to do that live. So my input equation is going to describe a circuit modeling the input current, IG hat. And that current is equal to these two things. An ID hat source, which is something that just depends on some control input, something external to our circuit, and then a DI hat source, which is some gain times a current that's going to be somewhere else in the circuit. Okay, from here I'm going to sketch my inductor equation. This is going to describe a circuit that is a KVL around the loop with my inductor. LDIDT is voltage across my inductor. Which means that the current flowing in this loop is I hat. And then going around this loop, I'm gonna have 1, 2, 3, 4 other voltages over here. I'm going to pick this DVG hat source, seeing that that's going to link with my current source at the input to give me a transformer here. And then my other sources, I'm going to have this whole thing that depends on D hat, my external control input. So that's just going to be some controlled voltage source. As I've drawn it, it's positive. I'm going to sketch like this. I have a VG plus V over N minus I R on times D hat voltage source. And then I have this term out here on the right, which is a voltage drop of DR on times I hat. I hat is the current in this loop. So a thing that would give me a voltage drop of DR on times I hat is a resistor DR on. And my last source, this guy here, it's just a minus V prime over N times V hat. And it's not going to fit. Okay. Loop around here. Now my last subcircuit for my capacitor equation. This is going to describe a KCL at my capacitor node. I'm going to have my capacitor with voltage V hat. And then the current going into that is my CdVdt, and that's equal to the sum of these three currents. I have a minus V hat over R. I'm going to model my load resistance. The resistor R, the current through it, because the voltage here is V hat. Current's now V hat over R. Then my I D hat over N source. This depends on D hat, which is external, and then my D hat, or excuse me, D prime, I hat over N, current source coming in. It's going to link with this voltage source here. So my complete circuit, these two will become an AC transformer, non-inverting, voltage match polarity, current comes in, goes out. These two are going to create another AC transformer, again, match polarity. Say flyback, so I expect my overall conversion ratio to be, neglecting the resistances, D over D prime, times the effect of the turns ratio. I'm going to get this first transformer as a turns ratio 1 to D, second one, D prime to N. I can resketch that as my complete equivalent circuit model. Other than relying on my art skills, here it is. Okay. Okay, so I've done a few examples. We broaden it out. The loss mechanisms as we model them in our DC equivalent circuits, they kind of show up in the same way in our AC equivalent circuits. DR on process and the result, no different, whether it was steady state or transient for this conduction loss type mechanism. Okay. Main difference, now that we're doing AC, by allowing non-zero averages on our components, we end up with one, reactive elements that remain in our circuits, those don't get averaged away. And then two, because of this linearization, we end up with these sources that depend on our control input. D hat. So these things are really all externally controlled by a single signal. Any variations in the duty cycle will affect all three of these sources, and that'll have some effect on circuit operation, on output voltage, or other waveforms in the circuit. That's what we'll solve in the next chapter, how to solve for what sort of effect do variations in D hat have on the output. Which will then give us our transfer function. Okay. Before we wrap up chapter 7, so now we've covered 7.1 and 7.2, introduction to AC modeling, and then this waveform averaging AC approach. I want to speak briefly about these sections. So state-space averaging is going to be really the same technique applied using state-space matrices to describe the circuit. We'll do this averaging in state space, so no different, just mathematically how you set up the problem, a little different. circuit averaging. It's going to be, instead of averaging the waveforms on my passives, I'm going to average the waveforms on my switches. Again, going to lead us to the same result. Okay. And then canonical circuit model is a way to sketch a circuit that can model any power converter. Useful in that there are some results for different converters listed in the book that you can just pull out of a table. Not so useful in practice because maybe more effort to manipulate the circuit into a constant form than it's worth. We'll talk about those things quickly. If there's time, we'll get into modeling of a pulse width modulator, which is something that we will use in the future. These three, I'm just going to kind of mention so you have some exposure to them, but they're not going to be something I focus and give you homework problems focused on. So state space averaging, to set it up, we need to write a set of state space equations for the converter. State space, I am modeling any sort of linear circuit in an equation of the form, it's on the next slide, x dot equal to ax plus bu, where x are my states, u are my inputs, x dot is the first derivative of the states. So I am modeling all of the dynamics of my converter. Now, x dot x and u are vectors. A is a matrix, B is the matrix or vector depending on inputs. This x vector is all the states of the circuit. States are things that have some kind of memory, so things like capacitor voltages, inductor currents, things that depend on an integral of what's happened to them from time zero to now. Inputs are independent things. Generally, the input voltage might also consider VD if we're talking about that as a source. And then output, whatever I want to solve from this thing. So there's a second equation here. So CX plus DU. That'll give me any output I want, some combination of states and input. I set up the circuit, sketch it like this, and then this is just what my circuit has in it. These A and B matrices then are things that I solve from the KVLs, KCLs, from the model of the circuit that describe how things are connected, how it operates. Okay. So X is just what all the states are. A is telling me how they're connected. What are the equations that describe how the state's going to change over time? Okay. So, for example, if I take, where was I looking at? Buck boost, and I look in a given subinterval. So here, subinterval one, when the transistor is on, if I write equations for this thing, I have these top two differential equations modeling what's going on with the inductor, what's going on with the capacitor. This looks like some time derivative is equal to some expression that has the inputs and the states in it, and maybe some constants. This one looks like, again, some time derivative of a state, some expression of the states and the inputs. So I can put it into this same format where x dot is equal to ax plus bu. As a matrix equation, it looks like this, just taking these equations and cramming them in here. Okay. So all this is these two equations put in two rows to make it a single matrix equation. Okay. And I can do that in all of these subintervals. End up with is two different sets of equations that describe the two linear circuits that exist in each of the switching subintervals. Okay. My switching circuit is hard to model, but in any given subinterval, all I have is something that's passive. So all the switches are either on or off. So I have x dot is equal to a1x plus b1u in subinterval 1. X dot is equal to a2x plus b2u in subinterval 2. I have these two separate systems. The question becomes how to combine them. similar to what we've seen before with some approximation, some introduction of error, I can generate an average model where I say, well, just take these A's that describe the circuit in subinterval 1 and subinterval 2 and average them according to the percent of time that I'm in each of them to get some net A that's my average A. Okay. Same thing with all of my other matrices. So I'm really just saying if it does has some dynamics in subinterval 1, some dynamics in subinterval 2, why don't I just average those two things together and I should get the average behavior of it. Mathematically, there's a lot behind that. It's not correct and it falls apart in certain scenarios, but it generally works well up to frequencies well below the frequency that you are averaging over, so way below the switching frequency. Okay. So if I do that, I end up with an expression that looks like this, where I took the two separate state equations that describe my circuit in two intervals, multiplied them by their respective duty cycles and added them together. This equation then, if I break it apart and look at the two scalar equations, this one and this one that I end up with, I can use those two as a KVL and a KCL to write an equivalent circuit. I end up with something that looks like this, which is exactly what we would have derived for the buck boost. Now it has diode loss, which we didn't do in the last time we looked at the buck boost, but otherwise exactly what we would have ended up with. Okay. So fundamentally no different. I'm going to get to the same point. I'm really doing the same operations, averaging based on all of my states, all of my inductor voltages and capacitor currents. Only difference with state space averaging is that I'm doing it in a state space equation. Can be nice, particularly if you're doing things programmatically rather than writing out, solving all of the equations by hand one by one and throw them in a big matrix and then just average the matrix to do your volt second balances and cap charge balances all together. Can also do an AC model in here. In order to get to an AC model, what I have to do then is, well, here I'm just showing the result, but what I'm doing is a first order Taylor series expansion of my AX plus BU. If I only evaluate the linear terms, what I get is a difference equation on these A's and B's. This formula holds for any kind of system, and I evaluate it the first order, so then I can plug that in, get the same thing now for AC modeling. Now I get a couple of equations that I can use to sketch an equivalent circuit model. If I go through and do that, I can pull these equations out of the matrices, sketch my individual subcircuits, and get my complete model, a complete AC model, and using this matrix state space based approach. So we won't use this in this class. You're at any point welcome to if you want to check things, plug it into MATLAB and see if it works. This is very useful in more advanced modeling of power electronics. Putting it in the state space, there's a set of theory around that that allows us to model with fewer approximations. The approach here is really no different than what we've done. We're still applying this averaging step by just cramming these different state space matrices together. But there is additional and more complex mathematical theory around not averaging, instead solving an exact response with all ripple included without all this approximation. So that's useful. It's talked about in ECE 581, but we won't use it here. Okay, the other thing that I want to talk about, section 5.3, is average switch modeling. This is some commentary taken from the book, but historically, circuit averaging came before the waveform averaging that we've taught. And it is somewhat useful for a reason I'll show in a moment, that it can be kind of solved once and then applied to different converters, particularly in simulation. There are ways available to use this in different converters operating in different modes, DCM or CCM, or the CPM, which we haven't discussed. So the idea behind switch averaging is that I can consider my converter combination of some nice LTI type system that's just passive, maybe resistors, but inductors and capacitors, and then some set of switches, all my transistors and diodes, and these are really the problematic thing. These are the things that make everything nonlinear and time-varying, because they're the ones with all the switching behavior. And I could pull those out, for example, in a buck or any other two-switch converter, it would look like this. I've kind of my transistor and my diode, and I've pulled those out of the circuit, maintaining their connection. Now what I end up with is my switch network here, and then this nice passive network up top. So what switch averaging is going to do is going to take this approach and then average the switch network with the stance that that's really the only thing that's the problem. So if I average this away, all this stuff is fine to begin with because it's linear. Okay. So it's not going to lead to any different results, but it's a slightly different approach. That example here in could be a boost converter. Instead of my MOSFET and diode, what I do is replace those with a voltage and current source, where V1 of T looks like this. It just models the behavior of this voltage, the drain to source voltage of the MOSFET. And then I2 of T, the output current, models the average behavior of the diode current, it models the instantaneous at the moment. So if I solve these waveforms, this voltage and this current, to be exactly what they should have been when the switch and diode were operating, then this should be no different. Everything to the left sees the same voltage, everything to the right sees the same current. The rest of the circuit wouldn't know that it's not a real switch and real diode in here, these controlled sources. Okay. Then once I've done that, I can average these two sources, replacing V1 with its average voltage, replacing I2 with its average current. And what I end up with is now some average behavior here, which gets me down to an averaged overall circuit where everything should be, have no switching component. Okay. It turns out, if I go through and do that, for example, fill in the boost converter, my average would give me a D prime times this voltage. My average current here would give me a D prime times that current. I end up with a D prime transformer here, which is exactly what I would expect out of the boost converter for waveform averaging. So I'm going to get the same result. As I average these things, they end up being linked to the other side by this constant gain, which ends up being a turns ratio on my equivalent transformer. So I eventually get to here. If I'm doing the AC model, in the DC model, these things would go away. I just have a D prime to one transformer. That's my boost conversion ratio. Okay. So again, gets me back to the same point. Okay. One of the nice things about circuit averaging is I can develop an average model of a given switch network. So a switch network connected like this thing, my boost type switch network looks like this, some arbitrary disconnected switch and diode looks like this for an average switch model. And then this is general for any converter where my switch network looks like this, or this one's the most general when I have a MOSFET and a diode and I don't care how they're connected. It's a bit limited that there needs to not be a transformer in between them. But in any converter where I have one transistor or one diode, this is the equivalent model. And I can now, in simulation, if I have some weird converter, I don't know what it is, I don't know how to write equations or how to solve a model, I can just go in and plug in this model in place of the switch network, pulling it out of the circuit, replace it, and now I have an average model of that new converter. So that's one of the nice things about this average switch modeling, that I can average a switch network, and then any other converter that has that switch network, I'm already done. I've already done the work in developing this model. Okay. And the last thing I'm going to cover at a high level here, this canonical circuit model. This is just trying to develop a standard form for these AC equivalent circuits, which could model really any different converter. And the idea is, through some manipulations, you end up with something that looks like this. So from the input to the output, I have some kind of transformer with a turns ratio that depends somehow on the duty cycle. In fact, it's 1 to M of D, the conversion ratio of the converter. So this models the conversion ratio, the step up or step down functionality of the converter. I have an effective low pass filter. You recall in some of the equivalent models, we've had inductors on the input, capacitors on the input, inductors on the output, capacitors on the output. Here we've moved everything just to the output. And for any of our models, we could push any sort of passives on the primary over through to the secondary, combine them together. We put all the passives here, and we get some sort of effective low-pass filter. This is, well, it's a PWM converter. Somewhere internally, it's doing some switching. Before I get to the output, I have to filter that down into something small, ripple. Okay. And then here are just two sources that model the effect of varying the duty cycle on the waveforms. Again, in some of the converters, these have been at the output or in the middle or at the input. Here, they've just manipulated to push them all to the input. Okay. That's something you can always do through circuit manipulation, move things around. The potential problem with it is, if I do, for example, this buck boost, when we derived it, it looks something like this. In this case, no losses, so it's exactly as we derived. When I manipulate it into this canonical form, what I get is this. So it's doable, but it's kind of a pain and pushing things around. I get some weird inductor multiplying some of my sources. Now this has an S term in it, so potentially makes it a bit more complicated to manipulate it down into this form. But the nice thing about this general form is you can go to the book and it'll tell you for this form, here's results for some basic converters. Here's your AC small signal equivalent circuit model of this thing. Okay. I think the authors had high hopes about this canonical circuit model of it being something that's adopted, and anybody, when you develop a new converter, you list what your canonical AC model is. Didn't really take off so much and become any sort of standard thing to do. I think perhaps the most interesting thing about it is just thinking about what this form is and why it is this. There are certain functions that any different power converter will do. Step up or step down, filter out all of its internal switching actions, and then somehow be controllable. Have some way from my input to influence what's going on in the converter. This model is derived then by just coming up with a circuit that has those three functionalities inside of it. Okay. So that's that. And then the last part of chapter 7 is the 7.6, which ends my high level discussion. Just FYI, this is now something that we are going to apply in future classes. Okay. So what we're trying to get to is modeling this complete control loop for a converter. We've now developed a new way to model the converter power stage itself. That's going to allow us to solve for a transfer function. And we'll get into and do examples of that in the next chapter. To kind of address this, We're going to talk soon about how to design this compensator, but it's going to use typical signals and systems type S-domain approaches. The one thing that's maybe still new and weird is this pulse width modulator. So this is something that fundamentally is also very strange and nonlinear, because I put in an analog voltage and I get out a PWM pattern where the duty cycle is proportional to that. We don't really have any sort of small signal model for a thing that takes an analog voltage and produces a square wave with proportional duty cycle but constant frequency. Fortunately, we are not going to care so much, because this model that we did of the power stage depends on, you can hear, D hat, right? Which is the duty cycle and how it changes. It does not depend on any sort of waveform that's actually PWMing at that duty cycle, right? So the input to this model, if I wanted a 50% duty cycle, D hat is just 50%, the number, right? Whereas what I'm actually supplying to the circuit in a real circuit would be this time-varying waveform with 50% duty cycle. But by modeling the power stage in this way, where the input to it is just the value of the duty cycle, not the waveform, I'm not going to care about this. And all I need out of this PWM modulator is something that tells me for this voltage, what duty cycle do I get in my model, okay? Difference is this thing goes from VC, this control voltage, to what's called delta of T for my real pulse width modulator. When I'm trying to model the control of this, what I'm going to have is whatever I solve for a transfer function of my converter, and the PWM is going to be the thing that goes from VC hat to D hat, not this time-varying waveform, just a duty cycle value. Okay. So this is my PWM block, and we want to know what that looks like as a control block, some kind of gain in phase. So what is the relationship between these things? To understand that, I want to look at a simple implementation of a PWM modulator. And this is kind of an analog way to implement a constant frequency but controlled pulse width waveform. So what I do is generate a sawtooth waveform, Vsaw. It looks like this. The total period, Ts. And then I have some input, this control V sub C, and just a comparator between the two. Okay. So whenever V sub C is greater than the sawtooth, the output goes high. Whenever it's less, it goes low. So this is my V sub C. As it's greater than the sawtooth, my output will be high. This point it crosses and goes low. Here at the end of the period, reset and go high. Now I get this PWM waveform, and the duty cycle is controllable. If I changed my control voltage to this, then I would get a waveform that looks like this. So as the control voltage went up, reset there, my duty cycle went up, okay? So how do I model this thing? Well, it's actually pretty simple. This is my model of it. The duty cycle is equal to, so this line is linear, just the ratio of the control voltage to whatever the peak of the sawtooth is. So if my control voltage is half of that peak, then this crossing is going to happen halfway into the period. If it's a quarter of the peak, it's going to happen a quarter into the period, as long as the sawtooth is linear. And I've got direct proportionality. That means that if I take a small signal linearization of this, D hat, is equal to the partial of this with respect to VC, which is 1 over VM times VC hat. So my model of this thing is just going to be a 1 over VM gain from my control voltage to my duty cycle. So here's my pulse width modulator, a control block diagram. I have a control voltage coming in, a duty cycle going out, and just a fixed gain of 1 over VM, no phase shift, or anything. Okay, simple. This is now a higher level commentary on, well, this model here is sufficient for what we're going to be doing, which is working with average models, whereas I've mentioned, because of this averaging, our models are really only valid below the switching frequency, right? We've averaged away everything at the switching frequency, near it, and above it. Okay. If I look at the actual behavior of this PWM modulator, it's a bit more complicated. It actually looks like a sampler in that this is the only time that the PWM modulator cares what the control input is. So if my control input was doing this, I would get the exact same thing at the output. I completely changed my input, but my output didn't change at all. This PWM modulator only cares what the value is of VC at the point it crosses the sawtooth wave. Okay? So in that sense, it's got some sampling type behaviors. And if I wanted a model that was valid up above the sawtooth frequency, which is my switching frequency of the converter, I'd have to take that into consideration and do some more complex modeling. Fortunately, we don't care, because at the same time, this is telling us that, okay, if I tried to, in my control, make any sort of changes, control at some higher frequency than this, my circuit's just going to do nothing in response to that. That's my control wave, and let's say that's intentional. It's what I want the output voltage to do, to oscillate this fast. My circuit can't do that. I get one time per period that I'm going to cross sawtooth wave, one switching action per period, so I can control at fastest one time per period. So perhaps no use to model anything faster than that. And then if we are much slower than the switching frequency, I can kind of ignore the sampling type behaviors of it and just say it looks like 1 over VM gain, not have to worry about any sort of continuous to discrete time conversion. Okay, so this is talking about in practice, useful frequencies less than the Nyquist rate. So we really want to be much less than it. We're really only talking about tweaking frequencies, switching frequency over 2, or more like switching frequency over 5, maybe over 10, as high as our modeling is going to be accurate. Okay, so that's the end of chapter 7. Summary, we're out of time. We're going to pick up with chapter 8 next class.